Well, good morning. It's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Folks, once again, we got an action-packed show for you today. Catch you up on the latest and greatest of the world of the automobile. Well, we're in NASCAR playoff land, and we'll talk about what's going on as NASCAR moves into the second round of playoffs. Formula One running in Baku, Azerbaijan. We'll talk about some crazy qualifications yesterday. An interesting article about the intentional driver. Also a trip to the body shop, and what's going on with AM radio. Of course, we'll talk about what's going on with gas prices, and of course, it wouldn't be the car show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on the car show. Well, from the pages of the website, The Drive, headline reads, Congress is trying to save AM radio. The question is, does anybody care? Quickly, when is the last time you listened to an AM radio broadcast? Okay, fine. When's the last time you did it on purpose? Now, if you drive an electric vehicle, the answer is never. What's probably more interesting is that consumers, and maybe it depends on how long you've owned a driver's license, some people really don't care about the state of broadcast radio because the vast majority of electric vehicle owners are not rolling around with an AM radio at all. This feature disappeared in some internal combustion engines as well, but it's omitted from EVs because their powertrains produce quite a bit of electrical interference, and the AM frequencies are particularly sensitive to that. But don't worry, Congress is on the case. While the automakers want to ditch the AM frequency from the EVs because of the interference, distorting quality, regulators also use the AM frequency for emergency alerts, and the AM broadcast does not require a subscription for a driver to hear this. So there's always been an ongoing issue. Does the consumer care about AM radio anymore? There's also a good reason to preserve the AM radio's reception. The primary driver behind it is the emergency broadcast system. Has become less of a priority as the age of mobile phones. It took the government quite a long time to finally get around to passing the Integrated Public Alert and Warning Modernization Act of 2015. In this situation, they directed FEMA to establish a common alerting and protocol standards and technology and terminology, which including being able to distribute communication issues with emergencies. To make a long story short, that's a long red tape way of saying we're not really needing to rely on AM radio anymore for emergency broadcast systems. But that hasn't stopped Congress from spending years on the preliminary step to mandate AM radio's inclusion in new vehicles. The House version made it to committee with an overwhelming support. The Republican-controlled Congress is even considering new regulations aimed at an industry that some people are saying, is this really necessary? So the bottom line is, while we understand that the AM radio does have a draw, perhaps the emergency broadcast system, some vehicle shoppers today and owners are streaming their content through their phones and tuning to satellite radios or toggling through the FM radios. So the average buyer is older, who skews for the AM radio crowd. Of course, the demographics of baby boomers and some Gen Xers who listen to AM radio on routine basis, which is true, but I don't think the absence of that is enough to steer someone away from purchasing a specific car. Yeah, I know the AM radio was a staple of cars many, many years ago, but that's true. And I know in my vehicle, once in a while in my truck, I listen to AM radio, but for mostly, yeah, I'm listening to FM radio, and I'm also listening to satellite radio. So we'll see. Is Congress going to say, hey, you got to have an AM radio in a car? Well, from the pages of Hemmings, the article is titled A Visit to the Body Shop. And this is from David LaChance. Well, it's not my nature to complain, but I guess I'm going to, because it hasn't been the kindest summer for convertible owners up in our corner of the world, up in the Northeast. At one point, we were taken by surprise that, yes, we had 17 rainy weekends in a row beginning back in March. Even fanatical New Englanders were starting to wonder about our gray skies, and we're starting to grumble. Now, the reality is that now that the weather is getting a little bit nicer, I want to spend as much time behind the wheel of my 1992 Mazda Miata. And I do. I'm the one responsible for putting her out of commission for a couple of those nicer days because I'm the one who had to make the appointment with the body shop. Now, the Mazda was not really the most carefully preserved vehicle when it fell into my clutches a couple years ago. The friend who sold it to me fully disclosed that the previous California owner had had a couple trips to the body shop with this, and I lived with some of the gap panel issues. And, you know, I was not really struggling with this because it was part of the car's previous history. Now, a few weeks ago, it came my turn to leave my mark. While backing out of a parking spot, I looked over my right shoulder to make sure that the coast was clear. I cut the wheel to the right too soon, forcing the left front fender to make contact with a concrete post with a sickening crunch. My heart sank as I jumped out of the driver's seat and looked at the scratched paint, bent sheet metal that I was responsible for. Now, if it pleased the court, I'd like to offer in my defense, this is the first time since high school that I had damaged a car that I was actually driving. In that case, my eyes were taken off the road by a parked Jaguar MK2, which resulted in me driving my Triumph Spitfire right into a pickup truck in front of me. Even if it's been 50 years between unforced errors, I had earned a mulligan. I felt terrible at what I had done to the Miata. Now, driving the crunched Spitfire, my dad helped me straighten out the crumpled headlight housing with a length of chain and the torque of a Cadillac sedan DeVille with some of the slathers of Bondo and a few coats of Duplicolor primrose yellow. You could barely make out the damage at a distance of, saying, 500 feet. Now I looked at the Miata and I said, well, I didn't have the skills to make a decent repair. So I thought about the auto recycling center and might have a chance to find a good fender that I could use with the right color. But I gave up on that when I determined that it turns out that there were only 1,500 of the Mazdas made with the sunburst yellow. So good used fenders weren't falling out of trees. So that's where the auto body shop became my only option. Because I was paying for the work out of my pocket, I knew I needed to shop around for some shops, so I asked for some recommendations and was directed to Kent Fogg at Tyler Auto Body in Portland, Maine, not far from where we live. He's a second generation body man and looked at the damage and gave me a quote, and I made an appointment. Now, when I picked up my finished car, Kent told me that he had removed some filler from some of the previous repairs, which didn't surprise me. He also gave me a little welcome news that the car was in good condition and there was no rust, and that was great for me. Now, Kent made a comment about some of the old filler and made me curious, so I pulled the receipts out of the glove box and learned that this Miata had been in at least two crashes requiring repairs to the left front fender, the left quarter panel, the deck lid. Also, there was a note for a sheet metal pull itemized on one of the records. I doubt if it was done with the aid of my dad and a 68 Cadillac. Now, according to the late Irv Gordon, who set the world record for driving 3.2 million miles on a Volvo 1800S that he bought new in 1966, he once told me that this car needed to have crash damage repaired three different times. Admittedly, all three of those crashes were the result of someone else running into Irv's car. Aside that, he said he'd visit the body shop about every 8 years or so to have the front end repainted to take care of the rock chips and dings and nicks. So I guess even cherished cars that get damaged when they're driven, that's still better than allowing them to just sit in the garage and gather dust. NASCAR news last weekend, they were in Bristol, and the headline reads, "How Bristol threw NASCAR teams an unexpected curveball." Well, for the second time in 18 months, NASCAR series brought what they thought was expected to be a Bristol Motor Speedway and a right tire, and were quickly proven wrong. Yeah, chaos is probably a good word to start with, and that's from Adam Stevens, who was the crew chief of race winner Christopher Bell. The craziest thing is after the practice, we had somewhere, but nothing like what we saw today. I would have bet the house that would have been a normal long run Bristol, and we would run through the stages no problem. That was not the case, because there was apparently very early in the runs, people were losing their tires. It's obviously cooler today. It's not like it's cold, but the track temperature was above the threshold of what we thought we would produce for a good race. And I would say 99% of the field were optimized for that temperature. Well, Saturday initially looked very similar to the spring of 2024 race, where excessive tire wear made its presence known shortly after the green flag. It resulted in a tire management strategy for drivers on the track and crew chiefs as they worked on the fly to match the strategy of fuel runs and available sets of tires. Along the way, the pace slowed, the action became more frenetic, and it was a little bit hard to follow at one point in time. Now, A.J. Allmendinger, the pole sitter on Saturday night, was one of the first to experience an issue with his tires. Austin Dillon, a playoff driver, wasn't far behind. And then, less than 40 laps into the race, pit road was overflowing with green flag pit stops. Yeah, it took all of us by surprise, Danny Hamlin said. In retrospect, I knew on the second lap, as I came off the corner and I was really tight, I felt something starting to shred. I thought, well, maybe we just tightened up the car. The car just tightened up too much overnight. Well, that wasn't the truth. Hamlin, who won the spring race in 24, on that day it appeared the veteran driver had the experience of saving equipment and running tire management, and he was the class of the field. However, Hamlin wasn't as lucky on Saturday night when he struggled through the night and then was finally done in by an incident that also saw the front right wheel come off his car. Now, the spring 24 race didn't give way to these similar events as the fall race. It was hardly any tire fall off at all, and the race was given low marks for the lack of passing and being less optically pleasing. In reality, it was the same series that Bristol had earlier this year. Well, this time, Goodyear brought a new, softer right side tire for Saturday night. At the same time, it had been used in competition earlier this year. The left side tire was familiar, was because one had run at Bristol for a few races. Well, in reality, it had nothing to do with the tire, Austin Cindric, who was a driver, said. It's all temperature based. The air temperature at the start of the night was 71 degrees, and the track temperature was around 89, according to a Goodyear spokesperson. There's a lot going on tonight, Brad Keselowski said. First, the tire worked, the temperature dropped through the threshold, and we got excessive tire wear. It's so crazy, but in reality, how a 5-degree temperature swing in track temperature was so dramatic. Actually made it into a pretty good race. The bottom was dominant, a lot of bumping and run passing. Kind of felt like Bristol from 1995. Yeah, it was crazy the amount of tire wear that was in at Bristol last weekend. In fact, during the race, NASCAR did something unprecedented. They gave the teams an extra set of tires to use because of the excessive tire wear. So we'll see. It's interesting because they're talking about bringing that tire to Phoenix for the championship race, which will be here in November. NASCAR is up in New Hampshire for the race today, and Joey Logano, the reigning NASCAR champ, is on the pole driving for Team Penske. His teammate Ryan Blaney will start in second, Josh Berry in third, Tyler Reddick in fourth, William Byron in fifth, and rounding out the top three rows, Carson Hocevar. And that race will be on today on the USA Network, and you can tune into that. That race started at about 11 o'clock today. Well, back to the pages of Hemmings, and this article written by Terry Shea, and it's called Intentional Driving. Well, my children are going backwards. Well, they're not regressing into their maturity, although it's actually quite the opposite. They seem to develop, well, a pretty good head on their shoulders. You need to credit my wife, Shea, on that one. But the kids are now into vinyl records, even though we live in a world where you can just yell at your phone or that creepy speaker somewhere in the room that's always listening and just demand what they want to hear when they want. And they're not alone. In 2020, from 2005 to 2020, vinyl record sales increased in the U.S. for more than 20-fold, outselling CDs since 2020. And at the record stores, well, that new vinyl pressing shares the same space with those used records. Now, you want to know what's also an interesting ancient technology that people are starting to share? Yeah, kids are into film photography and manual transmission cars. Yeah, the kids are getting into vinyl and film, and apparently also yearning to shift their own gears. According to J.D. Power, the market share for new vehicles with a manual transmission has gone from 0.9%, so approximately 1% in 2021, to 1.7% in 2023. At least one source indicated that fully half of those new buyers are made up between the 18 and 34-year-old demographic. Well, that's progress, because there are very few cars, or much less cars, being able to be purchased with a manual transmission. It's at an all-time low. So what do vinyl records, film photography, and manual transmission cars all have in common? Well, first, they're somewhat inferior to the latest technological advances in music reproduction, imaging, and shifting gears, respectively. Digital recorded music is superior to the pops and cracks as the needle is dragged across the dusty grooves of an LP. The resolution of a color reproduction of a modern digital camera offers a much broader spectrum than a typical 35mm camera. And that print, and I'm sorry to tell you that even the famous drag racer Grumpy Jenkins might have a hard time shifting faster than the latest dual clutch gearboxes, paddle shifters, and automatic transmissions. But one thing these things all have in common is you enjoy to do them, and you're doing them because you really want to. Instead of yelling out, "Hey Alexa, play that latest unintelligible hip-hop tune that will be sure to have my parents running for their earplugs" song, they're looking and growing their own record collection. It's a process to listen to a vinyl record. It's intentional. You have to get the music out. It's the center of your attention, a reward for your effort. Is not background noise. Want to take a film picture? Well, after loading your camera and winding the film, you have to consider framing, the camera setting, the light, and so much more. And you only get 36 shots to a roll of 35mm film. So each one matters. There's no computerization magic. There's autocorrect. And because your typical smartphone can hold more than 100,000 images. Now, driving a car with a manual transmission is very much an intentional process, too. You have to think about every gear change, the coordination of hands, feet, every single time you drive the car. Whether it's your classic, manual, or automatic, it's an intentional process to drive those older cars. Before you roll out of the garage, you have to check tire pressures, fluid levels. You might even do a walk around to make sure there's no mysterious puddles underneath your car. And sometimes you need to let the engine warm up to let the idle settle down because the car is carbureted. Now, I like to drive. I'm planning a trip, but I don't want to cross an ocean, the Rocky Mountains, or the Rio Grande. So I'm strongly considering driving. While I appreciate the modern technology that inhabits most cars, like electronic fuel injection, killer sound system, Bluetooth, heated seats, I still want to drive myself. With hands-free assisted driving technology like GM's Super Cruise, Nissan's Pro Pilot coming in more and more cars, DIY driving seems to be poised to becoming an endangered species, or at least maybe part of the Hidden Witness Protection Program. But maybe not. Maybe the kids who are playing their vinyl records and snapping pictures on film and shifting their own gears might want to keep on driving. And I totally agree with that. In driving my Corvette, which is a manual transmission, I feel so connected to the driving experience, because you're shifting that car every time and you feel like you're a part of it. So hopefully manual transmissions will make a comeback. Formula One news from today. Well, Max Verstappen ends up winning the race in Azerbaijan, and he was followed by George Russell in second, and Carlos Sainz, driving for Williams Racing, finished in third, and he had a great qualifying run as well. Interesting, Yuki Tsunoda finally scored a top 10 spot, who is the teammate to Max Verstappen in the Red Bull car. But the championship leader, McLaren's, finished in seventh and last after Oscar Piastri, who is the championship leader, crashed out on the first lap of the race. So we'll see how this all settles out as we keep moving toward November and the final Formula One races of the season. But at this point in time right now, Max Verstappen wins again and cuts into the lead of Oscar Piastri, who finished in last place after crashing out of the race today. Weird and unusual automotive news, and this one really struck me. The headline reads, Lewis Hamilton really only wants to own one car. Lewis Hamilton is the seven-time Formula One driving champion, and he drives for Ferrari. So it's no secret that Lewis Hamilton's first season with Ferrari has not gone well, and frankly, it was inevitable. If the last 20 years have shown us that any Formula One former champions do not win at Ferrari, but they might get a sweet road car out of the deal, and maybe that's what's going to happen for Lewis. But what is interesting is the sale of Lewis Hamilton's car collection comes after he also sold off his private jet about 6 years ago to reduce his carbon footprint. Now, in reality, he has sold his entire collection, which included some very rare and desirable Mercedes-Benz models, a few Ferraris, a noticeable McLaren F1 car. We're also talking about Pagani Zonda, an AMG project, one Mercedes-Benz, two LaFerraris, a Shelby Cobra, and a Mustang Eleanor GT500. What's interesting is that here's a guy who makes his living racing cars and driving cars who has now sold his entire collection. In reality, it's slightly strange that Lewis Hamilton only has a dream of owning a F40 Ferrari. With his kind of earnings and his kind of budget, that shouldn't be a problem. So here we go. Lewis Hamilton sells off his entire car collection and also his private jet because he's more into art in these days. And also he's worried about his footprint with regards to what's happening with air pollution and his carbon footprint. This week, the IndyCar Series announced their 2026 schedule, and we are very excited to announce that IndyCar is coming back to Phoenix, Arizona. Last time they raced here was in 2018, and they're going to be running as a part of the spring NASCAR race series. So they will be running on Saturday in a doubleheader with the Xfinity Series, and I'll have some more details about that. And I've got all my friends are excited. I've got people coming to town to be a part of IndyCar back at Phoenix Raceway. Let's talk gas prices with our friends at AAA. Right now, the average gas price across the nation is $3.18. Right now, here in Arizona, we are at $3.58. New Mexico, $2.98. Colorado, $3.14. Utah, $3.36. Nevada at $3.92. And our friends over in California are paying $4.65 a gallon. Texas, $2.74. All right, let's see what's going on around the state of Arizona with our gas prices. They've definitely continued to climb here in the state. Right now, the least expensive gas is $2.78, and that's at the stage stop in Duncan, Arizona. For those of you who don't know where Duncan is, because I didn't, I had to look at the map really quickly, it's right on the border of Arizona and New Mexico. Also, the second cheapest gas is at the Chaparral Mini Mart in Duncan, and it's $2.80. Our friends over in Quartzsite, well, they've got some cheap gas at $2.83. That's at the Love's Travel Stop. And then the KJ Convenience Stop in Tucson, is gas is at $2.84 a gallon. So definitely gas is continuing to climb, and we'll find out. Let's see what's going on with the gas prices here in Metro Phoenix. Yes, there were several weeks ago, we actually were finding gas under $3 a gallon. Well, that is long gone. Right now, the least expensive gas you can find in the city is $3.19, and that's a couple locations. The Walmart in Scottsdale on Northside Boulevard is one of those locations. The Quick Corner, which is on Southern Avenue in Phoenix, and then the Sahara Shell Station, which is also on Southern Avenue, that's $3.19. The Costco in Scottsdale, $3.21. The Sam's Club on West Bell Road at $3.34. Costco at 339 on 27th Avenue, and then the Sam's Club on 83rd Avenue at $3.44. So right now, yeah, average gas price you're probably going to see around town is going to be about $3.50 to $3.60 a gallon, and that's a little higher than most of us would like to see. Well, it's time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, in January, my husband purchased a Subaru Crosscheck. And since I'm not a car person, I didn't go along for the car buying experience. So it was a few days before I got a chance to ride in the new car. Then we noticed the passenger seat airbag warning light was on, meaning that my airbag was not working. We conducted a test and found that if my husband sat in the passenger seat, the airbag worked. However, when I sat in the passenger seat, the indicator was showing the airbag was off. Now, apparently, because I'm 100 pounds, less than 100 pounds, Subaru does not consider me to be an adult because I don't weigh it much. After many conversations with the dealership, claims that the safety function is so people will not attempt to have a child ride in the front seat. My husband asked why the safety feature wasn't disclosed during buying process. Manager said, well, it would be a little uncomfortable to ask a person to disclose how much their wife weighed. So the only option was is to have my underweight wife ride in the back seat. Subaru says the weight trigger is not adjustable. So you either weigh enough or you don't. What is happening is that we've even gone to using a 15-pound weighted blanket on the seat with me, and the airbag still says off. Do you have any solutions for that? And that's from Joan. Well, after possibly slapping the salesman around a few times with that weighted blanket, but he's right, it is a safety mechanism, and early days of airbags, small people would be hurt by these high-powered airbags, so manufacturers went to two-stage airbags, different force levels to help protect children and small adults. But I think there's something wrong with your cross-check. Manufacturers set their own exact weights, and I've checked in with the folks at Subaru, and they're saying that it's 78.9 is the weight threshold. So if you're, say, 85 or 90 pounds, the airbag ought to be on when you're in the car. So I'd go back to the dealer. I'd bring your bathroom scale and have them demonstrate your situation. And then confirm that the airbag is not on. They'll need to start by re-zeroing the sensor. Now, if resetting the sensor doesn't fix this, then they're going to have to figure out that possibly they have a faulty sensor and replace it, for you. And it sounds like you're well above the weight limit for this airbag. And if they're not helpful, remind them that they're liable for any harm that comes from a non-functioning airbag, and that currently one of your children is in law school at this time. Good luck, Joan. Wow. That's crazy. I have never heard of a situation like that. I've actually had my pickup truck tell me that I needed to buckle up the seatbelt on the passenger side when I had some weights there, thinking there was actually a person in the car at the same time. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for the car show today. My name's Jeff Wine. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday, and you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.